Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as usual, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Could not be better, Scott. UC just wrapped up another AAC championship on Sunday. They beat the Houston Cougars 56-55 to claim Hardware 2-4 this season, winning or taking out the Cougars to win a AAC tournament title outright for the first time, to go along with the regular season title. Had a few bumps along the road in the AAC tournament. Looked pretty sloppy against SMU, even more so against Memphis, but still won both of those games. And then really had a slugfest against Houston to finally nail down the title yesterday. Scott, let's go through each game. So SMU, UC beats SMU 61-51. They didn't look great. They pretty much just outpaced SMU throughout the game. I mean, what were your thoughts from that one?
That was like one of those, like the kind of game that we kind of worried about. Not really worried about, but like early, like a noon game on Friday against like a solid team who just played the day before. UC didn't look really sharp, and but then like the second half, especially the last like 10 minutes, they just turned it on, and SMU couldn't get any good looks. Kind of a theme that would come with the rest of the tournament. Like the defense just tightened up. Kyle Washington had a really good game. Kane Broome especially was clutch, and like they were able to like sweep SMU.
Yeah, it looked, I mean, Mick Cronin talked about, I don't know if it was after the Memphis game or after the SMU game. He basically said, yeah, when we got done with Wichita State on Sunday, which, you're riding high from a road win in the final seconds against a conference rival to actually clinch a regular season title. He basically said, yeah, we took a couple of days off, like just to wind down. And clearly they were not mentally prepared to go fight SMU and beat them, but they found a way to kind of come together and beat an overmatched team. It was a little concerning, just to your point, they kind of looked a little sluggish, a little sloppy, but they did what they leaned on what they're good at, and they clamped down in the second half and won that game. And it, I feel like if SMU had like two more players on the bench that Tim Jankovic could have gone to, UC would have been in trouble. But just the fact that they really have like what, like six, seven scholarship players now, and especially no Shake Milton, UC just basically had more horses to run with than the Mustangs, not to use any puns.
Yeah, definitely. Like any game where like Jamal McMurray, who's a fine player, a good player.
Yeah.
Like if he has to take 20 shots, your team's not gonna win. And he had to take 20 shots, and he only scored 17 points, and they couldn't win.
Yeah, it was just a situation where, like, UC looked sluggish. SMU didn't have enough players to really probably run whatever Tim Jankovic was trying to run after blowing out UConn on Thursday. But UC survived and they moved on to Memphis, and unfortunately they came out the gates really, really sloppy against Memphis. And I mean, I don't know what I was talking about, I guess, when we did this podcast Friday morning, but yeah, it seemed like Memphis, they had more motive. I mean, they were playing with house money. I mean, they had nothing to lose. They didn't even know if Tubby Smith was going to be their head coach after that game. And they came out white hot and really ran all over a UC team that was still asleep at the wheel and went up 42-29 at halftime. And that's where it seemed to get really concerning really quickly about this team's longevity, not only in the AAC tournament, but also the NCAA tournament coming up.
Yeah, Mick Cronin said after the game, like, you have to, like, tip your hat to Memphis, Frank, with the shots they were making in the first half. And he is absolutely right, because some of the shots they were making were kind of ridiculous. Like, Jamal Johnson went perfect the first half. Like, didn't miss a shot, had all of his 17 points in the first half. Like you said, like, Memphis, just, like, on fire, 42 points. It seemed like they didn't score 42 points the first game in Memphis. And like it was just a kind of a crazy effort. And then, like as you say, like everybody's biggest worry for the tournament, it's like you give up an uncharacteristically big half, and now you're down double digits to a better team than Memphis. But then, like the second half starts, and like a complete reversal, just an absolute like monsoon to start the second half, just bury Memphis, Jaron Cumberland. Like, what a tournament he had. He had 8 assists in the first game, didn't even score. And then the second game, like, goes for 18 points. It seemed like he had all of them in the second half. Just, like, really propelling the team with a monster run. Like they went 21-4 to start the half. And, yeah, that was pretty much that.
Yeah, where did that come from, by the way? I don't remember if I tweeted it after the Memphis game or during the Houston game, but Jaron Cumberland is an excellent passer. Like, I feel like he's the kind of guy who came into UC and as a freshman, he kind of had the profile of a guy who's going to shoot from outside. He's going to have the body to bully his way inside and the jumper to make shots if he doesn't get to the rim, you know, pull up from, you know, 8, 12 feet out, something like that. But over the last couple of weeks, he really has turned it on from his ability to get the ball to open guys in space. I mean, to your point, 8 assists is something I would not have expected out of Cumberland. I thought that was going to come from a Jennifer or a Broom. I don't remember the last time UC had a guard that had 8 assists since Troy Copain. He probably hit 8 assists at some point, but I can't in the back of my mind think about when that was. Where is that coming from, Scott? Like, where is that coming from Cumberland?
I think it just goes to show, like, the overall vision he has. Like, I think people kind of sleep on that. Like, he's a really, like, solid overall player. Like, he put up 8 assists against Tulsa in the final home game, too. So, and I think it says a lot for, like, the other guys. Like, just the way they run their offense. Like, everybody knows where to be and what to do. And, like, when this team is, like, really flowing offensively, with the defensive effort on the other end, like, they're impossible to handle. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah, I guess you have to give the caveat of, like, another injured team playing without their best player in Memphis. But, like, yeah, just completely shut down, only 18 points the second half. Like, they couldn't get anything going. All the shots that fell for Memphis the first half were all short, were all contested. And the Bearcats, like, pretty much just put the screws to them and, like, they dominated.
And it's not just the defense, though. Like, I mean, obviously the defense really cranked it up in the second half almost immediately. Like, you could just tell they had a different, you know, mindset about them. But, I mean, it started with a Jaron Cumberland three. Then Kyle Washington hit a couple of free throws. Then Justin Jennifer hit another three to bring it within 5. Then Gary Clark came out of nowhere and threw down a monster dunk to break it within 3. And, you know, while the defense was clamping down on Memphis defensively and Memphis could not get a good open shot, open look like they were getting in the first half, the offense really turned it on, like, quickly. And that's something that we knew this team could do throughout the season, but it was encouraging for them to just basically flip a switch and just start nailing shot after shot after shot when they really needed to bring it the most. I think that was the most encouraging part going, you know, that we saw in a critical, you know, win or go home kind of game, especially as we're looking forward to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, because that game went from 42-29 to, like, 42-37 in, like, a blink of an eye. Then the just like a really crazy, crazy effort. You really have to give it up to the guys for like that type of offensive explosion. 42 points or 41 points second half from the UC.
Yeah, it was an extremely critical game. They carry that momentum against Houston into Houston on Sunday. I don't know if UC beats Houston if UC doesn't come out like they did again. I mean, obviously, okay, so obviously if UC doesn't come out like the way they did against Memphis in the second half, they don't even get to Houston. But the way they played in those final 20 minutes really, I think, propelled them to a better performance against Houston, which they ultimately won. But sorry, did you have any other thoughts on Memphis?
No. Yeah, like, you're right, like that confidence, like, you get from, like, locking somebody down, like they did against Memphis, like they did against SMU, like, definitely carried over, because, like, Houston played a hell of a first half. Like, watching that first half of that game, like, where it was like, oh, these teams are putting up some points, it was 37-35 at halftime, and then it was like, oh, neither team, like, shot very well. Or played any kind of offense the second half, which is like a testament to both teams. Like, because I think Houston gave UC the toughest games in the league this year. Like, more so than Wichita State. Houston just plays a bit like unconventional. Like, they go three guards, like, maybe like even four guards depending on what you count Davis as. And, like, that really gave UC fits, like, both times they played. And, like, the Bearcats obviously able to take it to them the first game, overcome a big deficit, and then couldn't hang on late against, like, Houston on the road. And really, like, just kind of got a couple of good breaks down the stretch. Kyle Washington, like, so far the defining play of his career, that three-pointer to tie the score. That 55, and Gary Clark gets a huge rebound, fouled, makes the game-winning free throw. A tournament MVP, like a 2012 game for Gary Clark. It's like another, like, dominating performance. In a game where nobody else was scoring, he carried the Bearcats. Just like an amazing game for Gary Clark.
Yeah, and the thing about that is, like, to your point, is exactly right. Like, Houston kind of plays the kind of offense that's given UC fits in the past, almost like they played 2 point guards between Rob Gray and Corey Davis. Like UConn in the past used to go, you know, Kemba Walker, Shabazz Napier, Napier and Boatwright. And they basically have 2 point guards who would account for most of the offense, most of the possessions, most of the ball movement would either start or go through them. And I mean, they had good games themselves, 15 and 17. And it really gave UC fits throughout the season. And honestly, UC is lucky to actually be going into this game. With a chance to win the series. I mean, they probably should have been down 0-2 going into that game against Houston, but, you know, they weren't, and they found a way to win in the end. I mean, why Houston fouled Gary Clark when he was going up for a rebound to close out the game, I have no idea. And then I don't know why Rob Gray was trying to throw it to Galen Robinson Jr. I mean, he was getting crashed, you know, there with, you know, 4 to 5 seconds left in the game, but you know, he panicked, threw the ball away to Gary Robinson Jr. It flew out of bounds, and then the rest is history.
I don't think he panicked. I think that was their play. Like he was going to bring it up, and then he was going to throw it to the guy streaking to, like, throw up a half-court shot. Because, like, you knew UC was going to, like, double down on Gray, which they did. He just threw a terrible pass.
Yeah, it could have been that. It could have been that. I still don't understand the possession before. You know, it's tied at 55, and, you know, Gary's got his defender boxed out, he has the offensive guy boxed out, and yet the other Houston player comes in and whacks the ball for whatever reason, and he gets called for a foul. I do not understand that play. That was one of the dumbest plays I've ever seen in a tournament.
Yeah, that was a really bad foul. Like, you could, like, just see, like, the Houston bench deflate.
Right.
Because, like, that's the type of play. It's, like, I guess, A for effort, but, like, oh, you can't foul a tie game with, like, 5 seconds left. Like, you can't give up that foul.
And, right.
Like, on the other side, like, Gary Clark, like, 100% getting that rebound. Like, no matter what.
Like, even if he had to go, like, from the side or over the back or something to get that ball, he was going to get that ball. But, I mean, when he has a guy already boxed out, there's no way anyone's going to swoop in and steal that or knock it away. A little concerning, like, in that game was the free throws. I mean, even though Gary made one of the two, he missed the front end. He ultimately went 8 of 11 from the line. But UC was 63% from the field. Jacob Evans had an awful game at the line. He missed God, I can't remember at what point it was, but it was kind of late in the game where he just flat out missed two in a row. He went 2 of 6 from the line. I hate to say that free throw shooting is a concern and it's something that can be fixed, but it doesn't seem like it's something that can ever be fixed in the Mick Cronin era, because it's just been a problem. It's always been. It just is what it is. But is that something that's going to cost UC sometime in the NCAA tournament?
I don't know. It definitely could. It's like, really? Like, you had, what, your two best free throw shooters pretty much took all the free throws? Like, Evans and Clark, then two from Jerron Cumberland. That was it from the free throw line. I guess Evans is 75%, Clark's 74%. And, see, Jennifer's the best, but he's only attempted 50 free throws. Yeah, it's like, you have those two guys at the line, and, like, Jacob Evans, like, straight up shot terribly. He had a really awful game offensively. Like, it seemed like, I don't know if he was running out of gas or just, like, or what. But, like, 5 of 7.
I mean, he had a bad tournament. Not just yesterday. He had a bad tournament.
Yeah, 5 of 17 from the field, 2 of 6 at the line. Like, as you mentioned, 2 huge free throws. Like, he missed them both. Yeah, it's, like, something that I think you do have to worry about, though, just given, like, this team's propensity to not hit free throws all season long. And like you said, it's not going to stop.
Yeah, like, games only get tighter as you get further. I mean, usually, it get tighter as you get further and further into the NCAA tournament. Like, we don't need to skip ahead yet, but I mean, they're playing, you know, a 15 seed on Friday, and then they've got potentially a 9 or 10, and then it really, the competition ramps up, especially in their region, if they make a Sweet 16. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I feel like part of it could be, you know, tired legs from overworking defensively. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure. It's always been an issue in the Mick Cronin era, and who knows if it's going to cost them a game down the road. It didn't yesterday, ultimately, but it got really damn close.
Yeah, like, that game was just all, like, hustle, all effort, like, from both teams. It could have, like, the ball could have bounced, like, anyway. And, like, fortunately, it went UC's way. And Gary Clark, the man who wins the game, like, ices it, gets the ball. It's the inbound pass at the end. Holds the ball over his head as UC celebrates. They finally cut down the nets. Like, the first time for, like, the seniors ever since they couldn't do it against Wichita. Like, a big, like, celebration. Like, for everybody. Like, to cap off a really great season. And one of, like, the most enjoyable seasons in a decade plus.
It really was. And, you know, they got the trophy from the regular season. They got the trophy from the tournament. Are you satisfied with where the season has gone, or where we're at in the season? Like, obviously we don't want to see UC bounce in game one, but if they ultimately bounce into game two, where would that put you in, you know, emotionally in this season? Like, right now we're riding high, but, I mean, where is that going to put you?
That's kind of a tough question. It's like, it would definitely, like, obviously, like, if they lost, like, early, it would hurt a lot. But time would go on, and, like, we'd get over it. Because, like the Logan team, like, I know, like, that one was, like, brutal. And that one,
yeah,
just,
very good team, yeah.
Like, and to lose, like, a underseeded, like, UCLA team, like, was, I think, like, a preseason, like, top 5 team. Like, that one was just brutal. But, like, that doesn't really, like, taint the memories of that team. I guess it does some. But, like, it just added into, like, the Bob Huggins can't win a tournament game lore.
Right.
But, like, I don't know. It'd be like, if this team lost early, it would just hurt a lot. And then, like, we'd look back on it, like, after some time. It's depending on who comes out of the region, I think, is another thing, too. Like, if it's, like, some, like, terrible team, like, I don't know, like, they lose to Nevada and Nevada goes to the Final Four, it would be, like, a gigantic what-if. But, yeah, like, this, I don't know. It's kind of hard to say. What do you think?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to say, because I feel like if you're back in the season, they won 30 games, they won both tournament or both conference trophies. And let's say they end up getting bounced in round two against Nevada or Texas. I think it would be disappointing. I think because I feel like it wouldn't necessarily put a taint. It wouldn't necessarily, you know, taint the season. It wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't look back and say, oh, man, Mick Cronin underperformed again. I don't think most of us won't be saying that, but I think it will be a little disappointing not seeing this team at least play a game in the Sweet 16. I think it would be unreasonable if you as a fan wouldn't look at the talent on this roster, the character of kids on this roster, and not be disappointed to see UC play a Sweet 16 game.
Yeah, definitely. I can agree with you on that one. That's because their draw is, like, not the easiest draw in the world. Like, nobody has an easy draw this time of year.
Right.
But, like, they...
It's not terrible. It really... Their first weekend, they should get out of that first weekend. I mean, so jumping ahead, they play Georgia State in the first game, as probably everybody knows at this point, and they'll play the winner of Nevada and Texas. Go ahead, Scott.
If, like, they ended up getting, like, upset by Nevada or Texas, like, two fine teams, but also, like, two flawed teams. Like, Nevada kind of slumped down the stretch, and Texas dealt with, like, a ton of injuries. But like, at the same point... Like, you should be able to beat those teams. Like, this team has come way too far.
Right.
Overcome, like, way too much. And, like, they've been an elite team, like, all season long. I think, like, we just, like, worry about, like, as fans, like, the season ending. Like, nobody wants it to end. And, like, there's just, like, a ton of pressure that comes, like, playing in the tournament. And I think this team has, like, done enough to, like, at least quell some, like, the doubts. Like, if they have enough offense or like who's going to come through, because not one person like comes through. It's a bunch of guys that have come through
right
all season long. If it's like Gary Clark, like has done like the like yeoman share, like just a spectacular season for Gary Clark. Like what a way to cap off his career. Like we talked about it like last week, like he should be an All-American, like a player of the year, tournament MVP. Like, UC doesn't win the last two games if Gary Clark doesn't, like, play his ass off. Then you have, like, Jake Evans, who had, like, a rough tournament, but, like, you just know he's going to be there. And, like, what you got from Cumberland, it feels like they have enough pieces. Like, they can give, like, anybody fits. Because the other thing is, like, those teams have to go against UC. They have to find a way to score against their defense.
And that's the thing. It's like when you look at the NCAA tournament, a lot of it comes down to who would you rather not play. Like I don't want to play Virginia right now. I wouldn't want to play like even like a Michigan right now who's white hot. I mean they've had a week off, but they're white hot. And I don't know if a lot of teams would really look at Cincinnati and be like, I want to play Cincinnati. Like they just won the AAC tournament. They always play a brand of defense that gives teams fits, and oh god, they have a Gary Clark and a Jacob Evans, and even like a Jerron Cumberland who can score 10 points, you know, at the flick of a switch. And I feel like that sets up well for Cincinnati going into these games. Like they should handle Georgia State. Georgia State seems like a solid team, but to your point, both Nevada and Texas are injured. Texas does have Mo Bamba, who could potentially go to the NBA next year. Or be playing in the NBA next year. But UC should get into the Sweet 16. Now, I feel like it's a little... I feel like they should have Purdue's spot. I don't know how Purdue... So ultimately, Cincinnati got the last two seed, which I don't really understand. Purdue got the second to last. I feel like they should have been flipped. But lo and behold, they got the last two seed playing the number one overall seed, Virginia, in their region in the South. And they're sharing a region with Kentucky, Arizona, and Tennessee. That is a buzzsaw.
Yeah, definitely. I think their region is definitely the toughest. It's like just the other three seeds. Like Texas Tech is really struggled. I guess the one with Michigan State. Like Duke got it kind of tough, which is like saying something. I like Carolina ended up with like Michigan in their region. And like Xavier got stuck with Gonzaga, and like everybody's picking Gonzaga to beat Xavier. So yeah, like I think like all things considered, Like, Tennessee is probably the three seed you would want. Especially comparing, like, you don't want to be with Michigan. You said that earlier. You definitely don't want to be with Michigan State.
Right.
And, like, you take your chances with Texas Tech or Tennessee. Like, I know Tennessee's good. Like, they finished second in the SEC. They had the SEC Player of the Year. But, like, a potential Sweet 16 against them doesn't really scare you a ton.
I mean, I know, like, the thing is that you're when you're looking at the top five seeds, you have Virginia, they won the ACC. UC, they won the AAC. Kentucky won the SEC. Arizona won the Pac-12. Tennessee finished second in the SEC. I mean, it's a stacked, like, top part of that region. And, you know, when you're looking at the NCAA tournament, there's situations where a lot of the time it comes down to having the best player on the floor. And we kind of talked about this before. I mean, Kentucky has a team full of freshmen who are probably the most talented players coming out of last year's recruiting class that are finally coming together and winning games. Arizona has the most expensive player in college basketball. And Virginia has just so many players that can lock down and win games. It's one of those situations where I feel like UC could come out of this weekend pretty comfortably, but then it really becomes shaky as you have, you know, going to the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight. Like, I worry about playing Tennessee in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I do too. But, like, the thing is, like Tennessee's draw is kind of tricky. It's like they don't have to play, like, Wright State they should probably beat. It's like then we got like a Miami team who's also got like a ton of talent, but kind of like faded down the stretch a bit with like some of their injuries and like going through the ACC, which is not the easiest thing. Like they had to play North Carolina first tournament game, and like Loyola, like a pretty good season for like a underdog team like that, like 28-5, really mm-hmm. lost like two games like this calendar season. It's like, maybe, like, that bracket blows up a little bit, and, like, your opportunity to make the Elite Eight is that much greater. Because, like, I don't want to, like, overlook, like, Nevada and Texas. Like, it's just in the grand scheme. It's like, there's, like, a really excellent chance, like, this team could advance deep. And to go back on what you asked earlier, that would make it really, like, disappointing for, like, the short term if, like, they got tripped and lost and couldn't get out of Nashville.
Yeah, God forbid they lose on Friday. God forbid they're the 2 seed that gets upset by a 15 this year. But yeah, even if they make it out of Friday and lose on Sunday, that would be disappointing. I mean, obviously it's great to have the conference trophies, but like we talked about earlier, I mean, this team has the matchups and the talent to get to the second weekend, and it would be a little disappointing if they didn't get there. Like, that's why I feel like if UC had the Purdue bracket, they would have a much better chance to go farther. Like, they've already played Florida. They really beat themselves in that game against Florida last year, having 20 or earlier in the season, turning the ball over 21 times. If Florida happens to beat Texas Tech and would have met UC in the Sweet 16, I think UC would have had a ride into the Elite Eight. Texas Tech is a well-coached team. They have a lot of talent on the roster, but I'd rather have UC against Texas Tech than Tennessee, Michigan, or Michigan State. Like, I feel like Purdue has the easiest draw to get into the Elite Eight than any other 2 seed in the tournament.
I can't really say I disagree with you on that one. But then, like, I guess you could say, like, the teams that they would play in the second round, especially if they played Arkansas, like, they would
True.
Play with a more talented team to the second weekend. I guess, like, North Carolina's got a pretty tough one against either Providence or Texas A&M. It's going to be a challenge for them. But, yeah, I think, like, if you had to rank them, like, UC is, like, second game. I don't know. It's, like, kind of tough because, like, even like KenPom, like, Nevada's a top 25 team and Texas is a top 40 team. Like, if you, like, write up, like, some of Texas's attrition, like, to playing in the best conference in the nation, and, like, maybe they get that boost when they come out of it. Like, that's a really dangerous team. Like, well, we were just talking about like teams we were afraid to play a couple weeks ago. I said Texas, and now they're playing potentially Texas. Like, cause, like, any time you have to go against, like, somebody as good as, like, Mohamed Bamba, that's really scary. And, like, now he's back, and 100%, and that's going to be a challenge if, like, UC has to play them, or they have to play a Nevada team that, you know, won 27 games this season. And, like, did hit a kind of a rough stretch at the end. Like, they just couldn't beat San Diego State. But, like, they had a, like, pretty overall really good year.
Yeah, they probably would have ran right through the tournament if they didn't have so many injuries. It was like with Texas, I feel like it's a situation with Mo Bamba that UC faced against Wichita State in the first go around, where Wichita State's bigs really took over the game, and Gary Clark and Kyle Washington underperformed. I feel like that's a situation that scares me against Texas, because he can take over a game underneath. And if he completely negates Kyle Washington's and Gary Clark's ability to make an impact on the game, and hell, if Jacob Evans is still riding in that slump, that's going to be a dangerous game too for UC.
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, it's because like we've seen like Texas like beat some good, really good teams this season. Like, so you know that like the talents there, and like of course like their roster is incredibly talented. That's like that's the type of just the game that worries you as a fan,
right?
And like the games aren't easy, but like this team has beaten better teams than Texas, and it's just beat like a better team than Nevada, like on yesterday. So you have to like look on the bright side, and it's like this UC team is really hard to beat, and it's like somebody's gonna have to knock them out. Like, I don't think they're going to beat themselves.
That's true, and I think that's a good point. I feel like if UC facing adversity later in the season, and especially in the AAC conference play or tournament play, and overcoming that adversity is incredibly important going into this tournament. Like, if UC had coasted through the AAC tournament, I would probably be a little more worried about them going into this tournament just because I hadn't seen it, but the fact that they had to win so many games by turning it on, by just playing better, just, you know, having more intensity, and then fighting tooth and nail at the end against Wichita State and Houston, that experience is going to take them far, hopefully, in this NCAA tournament. Where do you think UC winds up? I mean, do you think ultimately they're a Sweet 16, Elite 8, Final Four team? Where do you have them?
I think they can definitely make a run to the Elite Eight, and then, you know, take your chances against whoever comes out of the top half of that bracket. Like you said, like a lot of blue bloods, like Virginia, Kentucky, Arizona, a bunch of really, really good teams. Like a really good team is going to come out of the top of that bracket. And I would take my chances against any of them. Like, yeah, they'd be like underdogs if they played pretty much, I think, any one of those teams. But like with like how this team has played, this UC team has played all season long, like I just don't think you can doubt like that it's going to take a big effort to beat them. And it's like the Bearcats aren't like unbeatable. Like we've seen them lose, but like they've only turned in one bad game, like out of 34. And the other times, like, it came down to the end of Florida, it came down to the end of Houston, and it came down to the end against Wichita State. So, yeah, like, it's going to take a lot to knock this team out. And I really like the resolve, and I think this team is going to go far.
Yeah, I think they have the capability of going far. Just depending, you know, you really never know. I mean, when you get into the NCAA tournament, any team really can win it all. I mean, hell, we saw it from UConn back in I don't know, what was it, 2012, 2014 or something like that, where they were a lower seed, or I guess a higher seed. They were like a 10 seed or whatever it was. And, you know, they ended up winning it all just because they had the right player on their team carrying them to a championship. And it's so unpredictable going into a tournament just exactly who's going to win. You know, you could take chalk. You could take all of the 1 and 2 seeds to meet in the Elite Eight, all the 1 seeds to make the Final Four, and then the number one overall seed to win it all. But you just never really know. And I feel like UC having that, you know, I don't want to play. You really have to hope that UC can just escape out of the first weekend and build some momentum going into the second weekend. I see them as an Elite Eight team. I think they have the talent, and if things go the right way, they could win it all. You never really know. But, yeah, ultimately, I think they can make the Elite Eight. That's kind of my expectations. That's my reasonable expectations for them.
Yeah, I don't want to say that's fair to, like, expect a team to make the Elite Eight. But I think that the potential for that type of run is definitely there. Because they're going to have to go through some struggles. But, like, every team that's going to go deep is going to have to face somebody good at some point. Like, even if, like, a disappointing team, like, I guess you could call Texas disappointing, or, like, a team like Nevada, who's, like, kind of, like, overlooked, who sounds like they'll be at full strength. So that could be a real slugfest, that was what I was looking for. But, like, on the other end, like, Nevada, like, great offensive team, top 10 in offense, but they're not really known for their defense. Like, Texas, like, great defensive team, like, really struggled offensively to be consistent. So, like, the Bearcats should have, like, a leg up on them. And then you get, like, a potential game against Tennessee, who is a really good team. But, like, the Bearcats should be favored against, like, a team like Tennessee. And, like, that would be a struggle. But, I don't know, would you doubt the Bearcats in that type of game? I don't think so.
That's the thing, is that they should be favored in any potential matchup between Friday and an Elite Eight game on March 24th or 25th. Like, they should be favored in those games because they deserve to be. So that's kind of, I mean, that's why I put them as an Elite Eight team where they ultimately wind up. I think Virginia comes out, that's a hell of a run they'd have to make, you know, potentially beating, you know, a Creighton or a Kansas State team. And then the winner of Kentucky and Arizona. But I think Virginia has the talent to really go to the national title this year. And I think UC ultimately loses to them in the Elite Eight. But you never really know. Like I said, this team has the talent, and this team has had the most talent in a long time to really make a national title run. You just never really know where the dices are going to fall.
If you can just get there, like, you take your chances. Like, if it doesn't, it doesn't matter if it's like Virginia or Arizona or like Kentucky or, I don't know, like Creighton, if somebody makes them like a miracle run. Like, the top half of that bracket is kind of just insane.
Right.
But it's like all those teams have lost, and like all those teams have like lost recently. Like, there's no reason to think like UC couldn't go again, like lock down Virginia. Okay, maybe that one's like a little extreme.
That's tough. That's more extreme, yeah.
It's like nobody's locked down Virginia. But like, if you can play like Virginia in like a slower paced game, which it obviously would be, and like get like a repeat of a game like yesterday, like, you could see them doing it. And like going to the Final Four. Like, I would have like much rather they had, I don't know, like who's like a terrible team be their number one seed. Like, somehow, like, Penn is the one seed in their region. But like, that's not the way the tournament works, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it's like, for me, it's a toss up in most games. I mean, not in the first or second round or so, but like once you kind of get to the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, like if you can survive that first weekend, you have as good a shot as any other team, any of those other 16 teams to win a title. And it's really just critical, just survive in advance. That's what everyone says, and that's really all you have to do in that first weekend, and you have as good a shot at a title as any of those other teams. As long as there's like not any major injuries or whatever, I mean, God willing, but Yeah, I don't know. As far as talking broadly in the last few minutes we have here, Scott, who do you have as a national championship, a national champ? Oh, okay, wait. Let's start with, what's your final four and who's your national champ?
I jumped on the Michigan bandwagon.
So really?
So I kind of feel stupid. Like, I think they'll be in the final four. Then I think it's going to be Duke. And then Villanova. And I kind of like Arizona. So I think it will be those four. What about you?
I've got Arizona. Okay. You really like DeAndre Ayton, right? Is that why?
I do. I really like DeAndre Ayton.
Okay. No, that's fair. And like we were talking about earlier, I mean, it's if you have one guy that can take over a game, you got as good a chance as anybody to go far. So I get that. So I've got Virginia coming out of our region, the South. I don't see Xavier surviving until the Elite Eight. I think ultimately either Ohio State or Gonzaga knock them out. So I've got North Carolina coming out of the West. Then the Midwest, I've got Michigan State. I think Duke is a little overrated. I mean, they've got kind of a tough draw too. I think Michigan State ultimately comes out of the Midwest, and then Villanova comes out of the East, and then ultimately it's Nova and Virginia in what would be one hell of a national championship, and I think Virginia ultimately wins that game and wins the title.
Yeah, I think I had Arizona and Villanova. I think Villanova's going to take it. I like their team a lot.
They're really good. They really are. They're like, I feel like Virginia and Villanova, they have the biggest right to the one seeds out of like any of the other one seeds, because they've been battle tested throughout the season, like the entire season, and they've won pretty much every game they've been tested in, and that's really important, you know, in the NCAA tournament. And they have tournament history too. I mean, that helps.
Yeah. I kind of like do like regret going against Virginia, but I think with like just a roster as talented as Arizona's is, like playing them in just in a one game tournament, like they're really tough to beat. Like I think they have the best player in the country, and like that with that type of advantage, like yeah, and like I know like Sean Miller's history, like he hasn't really put it together. But, like you can just say the same thing for like Tony Bennett. Like, right. His history, like, how they just, like, gagged away, like, their Final Four berth against Syracuse a couple years ago.
Or, hell, Jay Wright until last year.
Yeah. Well, even last year, they got, like, upset by, like, Wisconsin, who I think was kind of, like, underseeded. But, yeah, it's like those teams just stand out. Like, I guess, like, somebody on Twitter was like, oh, like, why is everybody saying Villanova's road is so easy? It's like, they have to play potentially West Virginia or Wichita in, like, the Sweet 16. Like, I just think they're so... Like, Wichita is kind of, like, a lesser version of Villanova.
Right, they are.
And, yeah, I just don't think, like, either one of those teams would really, like, contest Villanova that hard. Maybe if West Virginia could make shots, they would have a chance against Villanova. But I don't know. I don't see it. Like, they never make shots. Like, it's hard to, like, get last year's tournament game out of your head when they had a chance to beat Gonzaga, and they couldn't even, like, actually put up a shot in that game.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Like, West Virginia, they're a really good team. It's just that I feel like they've been tested and failed, like, too many times this year to kind of really be trusted against, you know, pairing up against a Villanova, you know, in the Sweet 16. That's my concern with West Virginia. And, like, to your point, Wichita State, you're right. They're Villanova, but they're like a Villanova light. It's just Villanova has better players running a very similar type of system, and they do it a lot better. And that's why Villanova has an edge going into the Elite Eight.
Real quick, let's project the AAC teams. Okay. How far do you have Wichita going on your bracket?
I see them meeting Villanova in the Sweet 16. See, that's my point. It's like, I think West Virginia has played a lot of, like, Wichita State-type teams this year, and they've, like, to your point, they find a way to not make the shot they need to make, it seems like. Or, you know, eke away, you know, leads and stuff like that. I just don't trust West Virginia. I think they're obviously they're well coached. I mean, Huggins is a man, but they've just had so many weird losses this year that I just don't trust them.
I think they're gonna take out Wichita, because I think their defense is good enough, and if you're not gonna get it from Shamit, who's gonna have a really tough matchup with Carter, and Morris to go against I can't remember his name, Kanate. That's a really tough for Wichita to deal with. I don't really know who their third player is. Because they've had, if they had a third player in the game on Saturday, maybe they would have beat Houston. You just have to force everything through Shamit and Morris, I think that team is, really beatable.
Yeah. Yeah, the chink in the Wichita State armor has come, has been kind of exposed the last couple of weeks, but I still think they're a better team than West Virginia. And I think they're both really good teams. I just think, I don't know, West Virginia has just, they've played a really tough schedule, but they've lost so many games where they've had a stranglehold on it, seemingly, and then they just see it eke away. West Virginia, if they had won a couple of those games, they would have been a one seed, no problem. But they just let leads get away from them for some reason.
Yeah, definitely. You can't, look at any of their games against Kansas and, wonder what would happen if, they didn't blow them.
Right. So.
The other AAC team, Houston, gets an 11 seed out in the...
They get a 6 seed.
Or 6 seed, pardon. They play 11 seed.
Don't be down on the AAC.
They play San Diego State. Surprise winners of the Mountain West. They would have to play Michigan in the second round, which it makes it seem like their run could end pretty fast. But I think that there's a chance Houston could hit the Sweet 16. I kind of like their makeup, and Michigan hasn't played in a while, and maybe they could lock them down enough to hit some shots. But I think they'll bounce out to Michigan, obviously, since I had Michigan in the Final Four.
Yeah, and I think. I have three brackets. I have Houston advancing in one of the brackets to the Sweet 16, but then I have in the other two I have them losing to Michigan. It's just tough. That's a tough draw I have. I feel like if Houston was playing Tennessee in the 3-6, I think Houston would have advanced two out of three brackets. But you're right. Michigan was white hot, and even though they've been sitting for a week, they were white hot. Heading into last weekend, or coming out of last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, technically. I don't know. Houston has the capability of coming out. They just have a tough matchup. They can definitely make a Sweet 16. It's just they're gonna have a hard time of it in game two.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you do wonder if Houston's offense could get past Michigan's defense. Being a real struggle for them, given how they just had a ton of problems scoring in this last game. But I think if they made it and North Carolina came out, they would just get stomped by North Carolina.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I don't have either Houston or Michigan getting past North Carolina. I know you disagree, but go ahead.
I think the problem with Houston is against somebody like Michigan, I think their talent, I don't know if it's disadvantage, but the difference between talent in Houston and Michigan is not as stark as the talent between North Carolina and Michigan. I think it's just teams where all their players are tall and well-rounded. I think it's just hard for a team like that to kind of overcome. It's kind of where you hit some of the recruiting disadvantages of the smaller leagues. And we kind of saw UC last year. Nobody would say UC's team was terrible, but when you're going against a bunch of five stars, it's really hard to compete for 40 minutes if you're not drawing in fellow five stars yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's the kind of talent disparity that really shows itself in the tournament, which is, who knows? I mean, kind of what we were talking about earlier, Texas is full of really good players. They could give UC fits in game two. you know, Nevada, they have less talented players, but they're playing really, really well. You just never know. The NCAA tournament is just weird. You never know what you're going to get any given game.
Yeah, because like you could flip it the other way and say it doesn't matter how talented your team is. If like your team plays as a team and doesn't make mistakes and like doesn't back down, like doesn't falter, it's a Final Four team. Like we saw it with like some of the Butler teams, like that VCU team that made the Final Four, that Gonzaga, like really, like I guess like now it's kind of changed. Like nobody would be like, oh, Gonzaga's like got the best, like all these five stars, but like they've been really good. They just made the final game,
right?
So yeah, it sounds like we're both really looking forward to a long tournament run, but being like cautiously optimistic against a couple of talented potential second round opponents.
Yeah, are you going to try to make the Nashville games?
I would like to. What about you?
I would, but the whole having a kid and a one-year-old that can't take care of himself is a bit of a downer. So
you can't just leave him at home for the weekend.
Well, I'd like to leave him in the hotel, but apparently he needs food and water and supervision and no sharp objects within arm's length. But you know, whatever. Government trying to tell me how I should raise my kid. I will try to make the Friday game if at all possible. There is just no way. It sounds like the Sunday game is probably going to be like a later game from what everyone's been telling me. So it's just never going to happen. I'm going to try to make the Friday one though, if possible.
I don't know. The Sunday game could be, I don't know like what I don't have the matchups like in front of me by days. It could be like one of the early ones.
Well, so like I did research on this, and like so the last 2 years, the 2 p.m. slot, the winner of the 2 p.m. slot wound up with a 7-10 tip on Sunday. And granted, it was Spokane and Sacramento. 3 years ago in 2015, it was in Columbus, and the 2-10 tip there was then. Was then sent on to an 8:40 tip on Sunday. And what everyone's telling me is that all the Nashville Sunday slots are like later in the evening, like 6, 7, 8 o'clock, something like that, which just never going to work for me for a kid who goes to sleep at like 7:30.
Oh, well,
so
that's a pretty
we'll
good,
see.
So yeah, I did not do that much research into the matter.
I was very invested in going to Nashville this weekend. I've never been to Nashville. It sounds like an awesome city to go to. It's a perfect road trip to go. It's only 5 hours away. I really want to try to make it happen. We'll see what happens. We'll see if I can make Friday though.
Because UC does play the early game on Friday. Yeah, it's on the ticket site. It says both the games say 6 o'clock though. I guess, yes, that's in 3, 6 o'clock. So, yeah, it's a night game. They'll play at least at 7 or, like, 9:30.
Well, the problem is that, yeah, if like even if you don't have kids, I mean, you pretty much have to, like, call off work on Monday or, you know, crawl in at, like, 5 in the morning if you happen to drive back, you know, Sunday night. So, we'll see. I'm going to try to make the Friday game. Sunday's probably out. Assuming they survive. But let's not think about that.
Yeah, let's look on the positive. And they'll be playing Friday, and they'll be playing Sunday. Which is the most important thing.
That's right. So, we'll see. It's gonna be a fun tournament. UC has a very good chance to go far. Hopefully things go their way.
And I just like one more thing. I do think it's kinda cool that like them and like Xavier both got put in the same region. Just Cincinnati takeover of Nashville, and now people don't have to worry about whatever the Inquirer tweets during the games, which apparently people like worry about for some reason.
People still read the Inquirer? That's interesting.
They do. They're like, oh, why are you not tweeting about the Bearcats like you are Xavier or whatever?
Yeah, it's we don't need to talk about dinosaurs. That's for a different podcast. But yeah, it is actually kind of cool that UC and Xavier got put in Nashville. I don't know if that's going to, you know, spike the amount of arrests down there this weekend, but on the surface, it seems like a decent idea. I'm not pulling for Xavier. I hope they lose in the first round. That'd be the first you get knocked out on in the first game. But yeah, logistically, it makes sense.
That would be pretty exciting if they somehow did lose.
It'd finally be another feather in UC's cap when we inevitably go into arguments with just the finest of humans who happen to root for Xavier on Twitter.
Well, is there anything else you want to get to before we wrap this one up?
No, I think I'm good. I have UC as Elite Eight. Hopefully they go farther. And go Bearcats!
Go Bearcats!